This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, TV critic for Broadcasting and Cable Magazine and TVWorthWatching.com, sitting in for Terry Gross. Robert Smigel isn't seen on TV a lot, but his drawings are. So are his hand puppets and his other crazy creations. He's the guy behind several cartoons that are featured on Saturday Night Live: The Ambiguously Gay Duo, The Ex-Presidents, and Fun with Real Audio. He also created the puppet Triumph the Insult Comic Dog for Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Smigel does the voice of Triumph, as well as the voices of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill Clinton, and others in Conan's talking photo sketches. Smigel was the first head writer on that show. In 2000, Robert Smigel created a short-lived cult TV series for Comedy Central called TV Funhouse. It's finally out on DVD. TV Funhouse is a parody of a typical children's show, but it's strictly for adults. The host, Doug, is played by comic Doug Dale. His friends on the show are an assortment of animal puppets called the Annapals. Each week, Doug has an idea for a themed show: a cowboy show, a Hawaiian show, a Christmas show. But the Annapals are always too grumpy and lecherous to have any interest in Doug's ideas. Here's the opening of the first episode, featuring Doug and his animal friends. Doug is dressed in a cowboy outfit and a 10-gallon hat.
Howdy, partners! Welcome to Western Day here on TV Funhouse. We're going to behave like wild Westerners. Hey, let's go give the Annapals their cowboy outfits. Howdy do, Annapals. Y'all set for Western Day?
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug, what's up?
Nothing. I just reckon it's high time you varmints put on these cowboy hats.
Maybe later.
Yeah, not in the mood, Doug.
Varmints?
I got my cowboy hat on.
Great. Why don't you shove it up your ass?
Whoa, that was harsh.
Can we get the hell out of here, please?
Doug, I apologize. Listen. Chicky's wife's on the rag again.
Terry spoke to Robert Smigel in 2000.
Let's talk a little bit about the animals who you have.
Okay.
One of my favorites is this mangy dog is always chasing his tail.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite character, actually. He is based on a real dog. His name is Zabu, and that was the real dog's name. And I even made the puppet look exactly like the dog. It was my wife's. It was my wife's dog. He was a German Shepherd mix, and I believe part wolf, and they took him to obedience school, and after two sessions, the teacher said, you know what, he's a beautiful dog, and you should just enjoy him. He's beautiful. Take him home. He was that stupid. And one of the reasons my wife and I get along so well is because we can both laugh for a half hour just watching a dog that stupid chase his tail, which is what we used to do. The dog had this incredible rage, it seemed, toward his tail. And there are a few things funnier than watching a really dumb animal passionately go after his tail. And then he had this way of chasing it, and I guess I've seen this with other dogs, but not to this effect, where he could go 90 miles an hour in a circle and then just stop on a dime and completely freeze and then go 90 miles back on a dime, just like as if he was trying to. He didn't look like he was catching his breath. He actually looked like he thought he would trick his tail this way. You know, I'll turn and turn and turn and then stop. And the tail will have no idea what's going on. He'll be totally frozen, you know. And then, boom, I'm back at the tail. But it just, of course, it never worked.
So that's your voice that the dog does? I mean,
yeah, yeah. I'm basically, I have this, I have this stubborn insistence on making all the dogs sound like Eastern European immigrants. You know, and I've noticed that some people have criticized, you know, They've watched the show and they've said, why is he doing, why do all the dogs sound like Triumph, you know? Why do they have the same accent? It's like, it's lame. Can't he come up with another voice? And, well, yeah, I could, you know, I realize there are more accents in the world than Eastern European, but in my head, that's how dogs talk. They just, they have for years, since I was 10 years old, I used to, you know, give dogs that voice when I would look at dogs. I think it's because my grandparents are Eastern, they're Russian immigrants, and I grew up with that voice. I grew up with that voice in my family for years, and I think I make an unconscious connection. And let me finish the thought because it could sound rude, but between dogs and immigrants just off the boat, because they both have a certain element of wide-eyed wonder that, as if to say, like, oh, look at all of this. I cannot believe this. And, you know, eventually European immigrants catch up and become jaded, but dogs never do. And that's why I can laugh at dogs forever.
The dog that chases its tail, it's kind of like a Roadrunner cartoon where the dog is Roadrunner and his tail is Wile E. Coyote or vice versa.
No, the dog is Wile E. Coyote. It's absolutely an homage, beyond the initial idea. Yeah, in the first episode, the dog buys products from the Acme Corporation. And in the first episode, he buys a tail catcher. And, it's meant to deceive the tail. There's a little hole, and it says, tail massager. Come on over here, tail. Look at this. Tail massager. Wow, it's for 12-inch tails, just like you. And then in a later episode, he actually dresses up as a tail to seduce the tail. So you see a giant tail attached to the tiny little tail, and Zabu's face is just sticking out. Hey, taily boy, come on over here. And later, in future episodes, I want Zabu to just become just impassioned and obsessed with, you know, making everyone in on, like, it's as if it's a Kennedy conspiracy thing where he's got photographs to prove that the tail is, you know, is a criminal, and he hires a detective to go after the tail.
There are real animals mixed in with the puppets. The puppets are driving a car and there's a real dog in the car too, or the puppets are at a cockfight and in the audience there's a real dog.
That's right.
Or there's a puppet cat who gives birth to real
kittens.
Mm-hmm. What's the interest to you of mixing real animals with puppet animals?
I love the idea that that you can manipulate live animals into a really funny bit, and they have no idea why it's funny, why they're there. That just adds a layer of joy to the whole experience to me. And we make it very clear, and we make a real point of not making the animals actually do anything. Like in the cockfight, for example, there's a bunch of animals in the audience, but if you look in the background, a lot of them are asleep, even though we have cheering noises. A lot of them are just lying down, have no interest in what's going on. And like, on the one hand, there's like a practical joke element to it that we're playing on the live animals, that we're making them appear to be doing things. But on the other hand, I also enjoy the joke the animals are having on the show by expressing no interest in what's going on, even though we're presumably trying to make them appear to be extras. They're above it. They have better things to think about than pretending to enjoy a cockfight.
One of the things I think you're doing on TV Funhouse with all your use of the Annapals, the puppet animals, is having them do the kind of things that animals really do in public, but that people only do behind closed doors, such as having sex, defecating.
Right.
I mean, I know, like, as a kid, there's things you learn that people don't do in front of other people, period.
Right.
But you see animals doing it all the time in the street.
That's right.
And it's very confusing sometimes as a kid. Like, how come they let animals do that in the street?
Yeah. I know. We can learn a lot from animals.
Well, that's the whole point of the books that your parents give you. So you can learn a lot from animals.
Right. And now this is an adult show that's trying to have animals teach people how to behave properly. No, there is something, it's fun doing a show with that has characters that don't have the inhibitions that humans do. And that can talk casually about things like pooping on the street or having sex as if it's just a regular animal need. You know, I try to explain to people that when I write about sex or I write about defecation, you know, this is going, I'm going to look like an idiot saying this, trying to explain why I think this stuff is funny beyond, you know,
cheap, crude laughs.
Cheap laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's all about the way our dignity is compromised. You know, sex has always cracked me up because it makes people do crazy things, you know, like working out. I mean, Jesus. Can you imagine? Anyway, but that's the funniest thing about it, that we are, you know, I remember years ago, we were at Saturday Night Live and I was hanging out with Conan O'Brien, who I met there as a writer, and Rob Lowe was hosting. And so everybody was passing around the Rob Lowe sex tape, and it was just, you know, something that you don't get to see that often is just a real life porn like that. And, you know, just a lot of it was really boring. And, but all this fuss was being made over something that was, you know, quite common. And I don't know, it was just, I just remember Conan just laughing and just saying, we're just all animals. It's hilarious. And so, and that really is the heart of it. You know, so to write about characters and have them just casually debate, oh, come on, are you crazy? Licking is much better than sniffing. You're out of your mind. Well, what about vomiting? Well, vomiting's good, but, you know, it's not the same.
Did you have a lot of pets when you were a kid?
I had a cat when I was 4 years old. My parents gave me a cat, and the cat just sat on the foot of my bed and did nothing all day long, just grew, sort of developed that mashed potato body that cats get, just sort of spread on the carpet as the years went by. But I just adored it. It had no interest in anything, but I just like, pretty kitty. Good. I just loved it. Loved it like nothing else. And then later on, after the cat died, my sister, who didn't really like the cat, suddenly... This is I've noticed this too, that like it's the sibling who didn't like the animal that suddenly is like gets all emotional about the animal when it dies and wants to replace it immediately. And that's what happened. And then we got a little tiny Bichon, and all I could do all day was talk to the Bichon in its own voice. And it was very similar to Triumph's voice, just a higher pitch, you know, because it was such a froofy little thing. And it was just very spoiled. I want to eat now, please.
Did you talk to it a lot?
I used to drive my sister crazy. Just, you know, she would like walk into the room and I would say hi and the dog would run up to her and I would be like, hello, hello, I've waited all day for you. Where the hell have you been?
There are some very funny cartoons on TV Funhouse. I want you to describe the premise of Wonder Man.
Wonder Man is a classic superhero who has an alter ego. His name is Henry Moore. And basically, we follow the adventures of Wonder Man trying to help his alias have sex with women who are impressed with Wonder Man. Because Wonder Man, of course, has to maintain the... you know, I'm married to crime-fighting attitude. But at the same time, he needs to have sex. And I never understood why Superman didn't use this technique for Clark Kent. It would have been so simple for him to just explain to Lois Lane that Clark Kent's really cool. And then he could have had it just both ways.
Well, in Wonder yeah. Man and in your animation, The Ambiguously Gay Duo, you seem to really know that sex is the subtext of so much pop culture, even the stuff for kids, like even the superhero stuff, the way they're dressed, a lot of their feats of strength, a lot of the kind of rescuing, which is almost like S&M imagery. So, right? Some of it, so much of it is about sex.
I guess so. That's another new one for me. I'm amazed how, you know, I seem to write a lot about sex, but I'm always surprised by what people read into stuff. And then when I think about it, it's usually true. Like even with The Ambiguously Gay Duo, it's based on something that never really occurred to me for years, which was this homoeroticism of the Batman and Robin cartoon. I remember doing a Superman special, the 50th anniversary that Lorne Michaels had, been asked to produce. And I remember Lorne Michaels telling me, oh, well, of course, Batman and Robin have that underlying gay thing. And I just sort of played along like, oh, yeah, right, right. But my heart was broken. What? What are you talking about? I don't, I don't know. I was 26 years old and I just, why does there have to be sex in Batman and Robin there? You know, and years later, those movies started getting gayer and gayer and they started sprouting nipples and, you know, there'd be tight shots of their rear ends and their crotchetal areas. And, you know, by now I understood what they were going for, but my feeling was, why can't we just leave Batman and Robin alone? You know, they do good work. Just let them do their thing. We don't have to speculate on what they do is their business, whether it's with each other or, you know, Kim Basinger. It just doesn't matter. And so that's where that cartoon came from. But then the irony was that I thought gay people would love the cartoon for that reason. Like, yes, you're right. People are obsessed with sexuality. Why can't they just let things be? But it turns out, like, every gay friend I have loves that cartoon because they watch the imagery and they're like, ha-ha, yeah, of course they're gay. That's right. They're gay. You nailed them. They're just as obsessed with sexuality as everyone else.
Some of the episodes of TV Funhouse have these parodies of those old 1950s personal hygiene films where, you know, you're taught, like, how to behave at dinner, how to behave in class, right. How to go on your first right. date.
Right.
And you're discouraged from doing anything sexual alone or with others. I have an excerpt here of one of your personal hygiene film or educational okay. training film parodies, and this is about mnemonic devices. And mnemonic devices are those little word games you can make up to help you memorize something you're supposed to memorize. So let's hear this excerpt.
Memorization, it's the hardest part of school, and probably life. But remembering facts can be easy and fun too. With a little help from something called mnemonics. You probably used a mnemonic without knowing it. For example, to remember the notes for reading music, you might use the mnemonic, every good boy deserves fudge. Starting to get it? It's fairly easy to remember our friends north, south, east, and west, but in case you're having trouble, all you have to think of is, no Spaniard enjoys washing. Easy, isn't it? Biology is nothing but tedious memorization. But mnemonics can make it easy. The complicated order of animal classification, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species, are easier to remember as, please come over for gay sex. Now you'll never forget it. Look out, biology.
That's really so funny, and I wish our listeners could actually see the film because it looks like the real thing. It's shot in black and white. Everybody looks very 1950s. There are puzzled students scratching their head in biology class. Did you sit through these films when you were in school, or were you past the era of these movies?
I was a little bit past that era, you know, but I have, I love anything that's, I'm one of those people who loves kitsch and things that are rooted in innocence. So, you know, yeah, I grew up more in the 70s, but you know, even back then, you would see these things rerun, and you were aware of them. So I still get a kick out of that stuff. And mnemonic devices specifically are something that I became intimately familiar with in college, and I just found them contemptible because they basically encapsulated what I hated about being a pre-med student or pre-dental student, which was that, you know, I would take these courses like, organic chemistry that had nothing, and the approach to teaching them had nothing to do with education. It had everything to do with weeding out the best students, and so it used to drive me crazy.
Well, Robert Smigel, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Robert Smigel, speaking to Terry Gross in 2000.